keeping you up to date with all the latest SEO and web development news. Little flavor added in.
Well, now let's have a little
bit. Detroit style. The Trademark Productions weekly podcast radio show coming live from Detroit.
Well, actually, Royal Oak. No one really lives in Detroit anymore.
Michael Hoffman's with us live.
Hello.
As always is. And lots of good stuff happening this week in the worldwide, the WWW, the Information Superhighway. Confirmed yes. Panda report. So this is Panda 22. And
what's the news?
Not a whole of a lot. Just that Google did not make a formal announcement of it.
Because there were
things
rumblings.
Were happening before Thanksgiving.
Because there were rumblings of it last week, weren't there?
Yeah. So I guess it's as of November 21st is Panda 22. I looked pretty diligently this morning. It doesn't appear that there's been really any effect on any of our clients and ourselves, but they're saying less than 1% have been updated or affected because of this. So that is, two of them in November now, which is interesting because 21st and the 5th, and then, you only had one in September, one in August, and, you go back towards April, and that's when we had doubles. So yeah. 2.53 and 2.52 were the 13th and 19th in 2011. So
Google's been moving along pretty intensely lately. I mean, October was a huge month. They had a bunch of updates. You had the exact match domain updates. There was a Penguin update. There was a Panda update.
I don't know.
Yeah. They've been busy. They're doing something.
Yeah, I think they're trying to really help to increase the clicks on ads and the placement for ads. Aaron Wall over at SEO Book. I'd like you to also cite that on our blog for the podcast.
All right.
Aaron Wall, SEObook.com/blog. But he had an article about there basically talking about scraping and where ads are displaying and as far as shopping ads and how even some shopping sites are scraping other shopping types of feeds and then redisplaying them as their own and just the confusions of all those and how, it used to be frugal, used to be free, but now it's pay for and it's just the total increase that they're trying to do with everything. On to other news.
Yes.
Google earlier this month enhanced link attribution for in-page analytics. So when you're in Google Analytics, there's a pretty cool tool, basically. If you're really into looking at your conversion rate, they have an advanced their in-page link attribution tool. It was basically if you had a web page with two links pointing to the same internal URL, you didn't know which link a user had clicked, essentially.
Oh,
so
awesome.
Now you know exactly which link they clicked on or the two or three different links that they have going to that same page. So the data will specify which link the user clicked on, which is kind of cool.
And that'll allow you to see where things are doing better than, where one.
Yeah, if you got calls to actions and whatnot that's happening, you'll be able to see which sign-up buttons receive the most clicks. Smaller sites probably are not going to benefit much, but ones with higher yields of traffic is definitely going to help you. And I think if you're using that in conjunction with like a paid ad campaign, sending them to landing pages and looking at calls to actions that are happening on those with A/B testing,
I was just going to say
which ones are going to work better for you
for A/B testing, but
yes,
beat me to it.
Yeah, and so the other one we're going to talk about is basically optimizing Pinterest more for SEO. And I talk SEO now with that. What is SEO? Is that a? It's not a metaphor. It's a
acronym.
Acronym. The acronym is a little bit lighter now, but everybody knows what SEO means. Mm-hmm. And I think SEO just has it's so much. It's like saying food.
Yeah, it's kind of an umbrella of everything.
Yeah,
you know.
So basically, some tips to make sure that let's talk about 10 tips here to make sure that your Pinterest account is optimized for better search. So you want to make sure specifically, number one, that your account is being indexed and not only by Google, but also by Bing and other search engines may come there. And you got to remember that other search engines also feed other engines as well and other sites. So you want to go ahead and poke around in your settings and change a few things. You want to make sure that search privacy is set to off.
Okay.
Search privacy is set to off. Choose your boards and your themes. I guess your board titles and themes wisely. So what are you naming those? And you want to, I think this is traditional SEO as well. Think about the keyword phrases or keyword sets, maybe the long tail, that you are utilizing for to name your board or an actual theme.
That'll help your boards get pulled into the million of topics feeds that Pinterest has.
Yeah, I use a keyword or two. Don't make the description too long, but don't be afraid to get specific. So as an example, of you might have one board for like recipes.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of like making everything under the sun, so that your recipes may consist of barbecue or cooking and holiday and desserts and salads and
separate
fish
them all
and
by
meat.
Category.
Yeah, break them apart a little bit more. So you might want to talk about one for cookies and then another one for gluten-free products.
It kind of sounds like... they're saying optimize your boards the way you might a blog with different categories.
Because ultimately, let's go back to the recipe one again. You may have some people that are vegetarian or vegan that mm-hmm. may file your gluten-free type of a board that you have going in there rather than just your recipe one because they happen to see one that was for some gluten-free cookies.
Exactly.
So that might help you to target those a little bit better.
We should get some cookies in the office, by the way.
Just what we need with all the... You know, there's a lot of chocolate out there still.
I know.
Probably on a bi-weekly basis, our... I guess it's kind of like our house mom.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say she's our house mom.
Yeah, our house mom, Meredith, runs out and does like a huge like supply...
big Costco run.
Yeah, a big run. And buys these ginormous Costco pallets of candy to shove them on in our coffee bar. And... it's always funny because we kind of laugh because she, hoards everything in her office and locks it, but she'll fill those jars up and there's six of them on the table.
And they just disappear.
Yeah. And we're always like, I wonder how long this is going to take because this has got M&Ms and Kit Kats.
Yeah. We've been behaving though. I've been limiting myself to one candy bar a day.
Yeah. I've been pretty much just ignoring it.
You've got your treadmill desk now.
Yeah. Yeah. Which
stay
is
stay fit.
Yeah. Which is another great, I think would be a good little feature for our podcast next week. At least put a picture up of it and kind of see what's going on. And I have some,
ideas.
I am doing a 30-day, but let's talk about the 30-day in closing.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
So number three, and this kind of goes with number two, is about keywords in your description.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about it before specifically, but you don't want to just put something in there like cookie recipes.
Yes.
But use a description and be a little bit more specific. You know that Pinterest is going to continue to enhance their algorithm,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to be looking at people that are abusing it as well. I use basic SEO principles in doing so, but make sure that your titles, your themes, and your keywords in the description are thoughtful.
Yeah, you want to be able to be descriptive but brief.
Yeah.
You want to be concise, get their attention, and... hopefully it works.
So that was on the number four is keep a short and meaningful description.
Hey,
so don't make it and turn into a huge blog post. A repin is basically the top of the image. So you're not going to benefit from making viewers scroll past to read your description.
Exactly.
And there's always a chance that you're going to duplicate the content if you paste the whole post there. So instead, write a very simplistic 1 to 2 sentence description and a call to action, encouraging others to repin and to click to read more. And hopefully maybe that, click through, you can even drop a URL back to your site.
Exactly.
Which is good.
Well, I mean, Pinterest is still one of the leading referrers to blogs.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, I think it's number three or number four right now.
I think it's a great channel. I really think it's a great channel. And I'm interested to hear about how a lot of large retailers have utilized that.
Mm-hmm.
Even medium to small retailers as well. I mean, think about the people that sell like gifts, corporate gifts.
I found Christmas gifts on Pinterest.
Yeah. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Another one I use a lot is Fancy.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time.
I love Fancy, man.
I haven't used Fancy yet.
Love Fancy. Just buying some of the shit on there is just really weird because you want to buy stuff and they're from all different merchants and retailers. That's all in their feed and it's a centralized ordering, but then they parse it out and then it's like 3-4 weeks to get like a pair of shoes. It's like some of the stuff's in there is a little bit weird, but Fancy is very, very cool. TheFancy.com.
TheFancy.com.
If you go Fancy.com, it's some weird attorney like in Maryland. It's a trick. But TheFancy.com is
God, that's
cool.
That's a great domain name, fancy.com.
Yeah, she was smart back in the day. So going back to this is high-quality images. So that's number five. Always use, I think that's kind of a given. Everybody likes to see that. And, creating and producing content and having to take pictures or find those. And I think going with high-quality images, you want to make sure that licensing and copyright is taken into consideration.
Yes.
So when in doubt, cite somebody or cite the source that you found it at so that you can at least claim, because I know that there are attorneys out there personally that I know myself that do have departments or do have one or two individuals, usually junior attorneys, that are out there sending cease and desist and actually filing settlements.
Yeah.
Sending settlements out to people saying, you've used our image. We know you've used it this many times. Here's our license for it all. You don't have to show us a license or send us a check for $1,000.
And the thing I've never understood is that taking a decent picture is not hard.
No.
I mean, only thing you need is a steady hand and a half-decent camera. You know?
I get it. But, and, you know, think about the process, which everybody experiences, is I take the picture. And let's just say you're using your iPhone. Okay? Because the iPhone 5 now has a nice megapixel resolution on it. It's really
beautiful.
Pretty hot. So now I plug it in. It goes into my iPhoto. I have to pull that image out. You normally drag it to my desktop, rename the image. Now I need to resize it somehow. If I don't have a proprietary program like Adobe Photoshop, maybe I'm using the light version, or I don't even know what other program would actually do that resizing, if there's any on board for PCs.
There are a few, but Photoshop's the only one.
But you got to resize that picture, then you got to save it out. So there's a process in your planning in order to get that image up to the web. So it's very true. Advantageous just to do a right click, save as, and save it to your desktop and re-upload it. But don't do it. Just be nice about it. Be cool, because the last thing you want is people to steal your shit. Which brings me to another thing is people may not know, but I have Shar Pei dogs.
Yes.
I have two Shar Peis. I've had four in my lifetime. I love Shar Peis. They're very, very cool. It's a very, very cool, fun breed. And I have minis. So, of course, they're very wrinkly and stuff. But I had posted and joined some Shar Pei groups in my personal Facebook account. And for the past couple of years, I've been talking with these different breeders and people that are in competition for showing dogs, Peis, normally, or mostly Peis, professionally around the world. And a couple weeks ago, out of nowhere, like when I first got my newest Peis that I have, the two that I have now, they're 5 years old. But when I first got them, I took this picture of them in my backyard, sitting next to each other, really scrungled up. So they just look like these big balls of wrinkles. But one's a bluish gray, one's a black.
Gotcha.
And so somebody stole one of my pictures, captioned it, wrote some Italian, and it was a good thing. It wasn't nothing negative, but it was to the context of, you know, growing old is never fun unless you're young and you can grow into your wrinkles. It was something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it just got social fire, man. And so now if you actually search for these particular images, you'll find them all over image search as well. So it's just like someone scammed one of my Facebook pictures, repurposed it, posted it back out there, and it's being shared all over the place. And I was like, wow, that's pretty crazy. Like someone would do that.
Yeah.
But what's my recourse, right? What if it was something that was kind of important? So be careful of stuff like that, because you never know when people are going to do it, and it's sometimes unintentional.
And you got to make sure you own the images you actually own.
Yeah. So number six is making sure that your image optimization practices are up to par. So SEO best practices, I think some of the points that is to make sure that your file names, instead of using the default numbers and letters that they do with that, name it to what it's supposed to be. Use dashes. Don't use underscores. Don't make it so goddamn long. And then when you upload those, if you have the ability to squish an alt tag in there with some keywords, that would be good as well. But more importantly is make it so that the keywords and the description is thoughtful, it's concise, and it's kind of to the point.
Well, I know there are programs like Photo Mechanic, which is like a bulk photo editor.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. I have it on my MacBook. It allows you to actually add descriptions to photos.
That's great.
Which when you upload
So it them, actually put like metadata inside the image file.
Exactly.
It's pretty cool. Number seven is link. Since Pinterest already does link and integrate with Facebook and Twitter, I would always link up those social profiles. Just don't spam the shit out of people.
Yes.
You know, let's be cordial and appropriate and nice. So an individual may find this to be very, very useful, but some companies may want to steer away from this unless you're doing a small amount of pinning. Because accounts can become inundated very quickly with just a ton of pins that are going in there. So people looking through all those, it might start to become noise to them.
I think that's a risk with any social network, but particularly people who are using Pinterest all the time.
Sure, sure. Number eight, pin deeply. Get it in there deep. Go deep with your pins. No, so
I don't like that phrase at all.
Yeah, it is a little dominatrix feeling. But we're talking about Pinterest.
Acupuncture gone wrong.
Yes. So push that pin deep in there. and when you're deciding what images you want to pin.
You almost got a legitimate spit take.
Consider carefully the page you want it to lead back to, which is going to be your landing page.
Yes.
So treat it in that way. So if the viewer doesn't know what to find, what they're looking for, they're going to lose interest. So mm-hmm. give them a clear path to where it's going to go to. So think about that entire breadcrumb that you want to have initiated. Number nine, predetermine the description of your pin. So when a visitor is going to choose a pin, when they're going to pin something from your site to Pinterest, give them some options on what to best describe it. I guess be more forthcoming and suggestive in how mm-hmm. you want them to repeat that, because obviously that is going to help to make you as the sole source, and which is at a big important part if it's being crawled and being displayed, if Google's getting to it in some way, shape, or form on someone's blog. So it does have a recourse back to you that people are utilizing the same different types of keyword phrases and descriptions. So don't leave it up to the user. And if you use something like WordPress mm-hmm. as well, too, you can be suggest them and lead them to the direction how they can use the plugin to pin it on Pinterest.
Yep. Yeah, all so. That stuff is customizable.
Yeah. And so number 10, foremost and finally, foremost and finally.
There we go.
Is restrict your pin it button to permalinked pages.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's best to keep the pin in the sharing button on specific posts, but not on the main page of your site or under category posts, which I see a lot of people doing, especially like with WordPress, as it is a plugin, like social sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost become noise, become normalized as like a security symbol on a site. You just don't notice it anymore. So I'd get a little bit more specific for where you are putting that, the pin it button.
Yes.
And how you want people to utilize that. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I think that's really a really good point, because I know, I read multiple blogs per day and I don't ever click a share button on a blog. You know? And I mean, I'm not an active pinner. I use Pinterest as a browsing tool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't pin stuff very often. It's just for my nerd stuff. And, but if I saw something that was visual and it actually had that button right next to it and it wasn't something that I see all the time, I'd be much more inclined as a user to actually use their site to pin it instead of just pinning it from Pinterest.
Sure. And so that's our top 10 for Pinterest. And you use a lot of the best for SEO. And they seem to be pretty... Well, coming from an SEO standpoint of view, it's
pretty standard.
Pretty standard and something you would do anyways. But if people are not in that mind frame...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really, it's a really good, basically beginner's guide to Pinterest SEO.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll have a nice little, recap of that on our blog post for this podcast as well. And then last but not least, this will be added to our blog as well, is, Twitter now is really pushing, to do some monetization of their paid tweets and promoted tweets. Mm-hmm. So it's either going to be post or promoted people. And they're doing so in an email that they just sent me, which I'll have a copy of up on there. But they gave me $1,000.
I saw that.
In sponsored ads that I can utilize before December 31st. And the restriction is as long as I give my credit card information, the first $1,000 would be free. And then anything beyond that, they'll start hitting my credit card. So if I got $1,000 and I'm barely active it's a lot of repurposing, which I use Twitter for, a lot with LinkedIn. Especially that I automatically just share it to my Twitter feed as well, because mm-hmm. just to promote the content. But for $1,000, I'm gonna push it a little bit and see what it gets us. I just want to get specific with some of my testing to see how well it's gonna work. So maybe we'll recap that after the holiday. But people should start to see those coming to them in different ways. But $1,000, man, that's huge.
Well, I'm curious as to what that's gonna do to the user experience, because Facebook's promoted post, which we've talked about, but. I don't know if you've noticed in your Facebook feed, but promoted posts are every third, fourth thing in the news feed now. And I use Facebook for chat or when I know someone is going to be there and I know someone's going to post good shit, I go to the profile now. I'm no longer on the news feed because I don't care that so-and-so liked Heineken 6 months ago.
Yeah.
You know,
I use my Facebook... for just keeping up on people and seeing what's going mm-hmm. on, but a lot of covert... A lot of listening
mm-hmm.
and reading and how people are acting on there or what messages they're promoting and unwillingly people of large brands that work for brands and stuff, how they're curating themselves, which is always
it's always kind of interesting,
biologically unbelievably awesome to see some of that shit. Because people uninhibitedly, when they feel that they're online and they're standing behind a computer, they don't realize the type of broadcasting and audience that's out there and what they're taking from that. And
yes,
so many people forget about that, which is a reputation management issue. But at any rate, I use it a lot for international friends.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than SMS texting each other and stuff and sending emails back and forth, you can on Facebook and chat for free. And now
exactly.
The mobile device, too.
Yep.
So it's just being utilized through the Facebook app. It's not an SMS charge, which mm-hmm. in internationals, a lot of them all pay by the minute. They don't have plans.
Yeah.
So they got to refuel, and that will take away from their plans themselves and their text minutes. So that's a great tool, and I know a lot of my international friends use that in a huge way, or other apps too.
Now, do we want to discuss Microsoft's new ad campaign?
Yeah, talk about that. That's pretty all cool. Right.
Well, the ad was released, I believe it was released yesterday or Wednesday. I don't know. I didn't see it till last night. But it's an ad.
Can we put a link to it on our website?
We will. Okay. We actually tweeted it and sent it all out this morning.
Let's not tweet anymore in 2013. Let's twat.
Sounds good.
All right.
But this ad, it's a YouTube video of a guy who is, you know, he's on the internet, and he's just trolling the web about how much he hates IE. You know, he's commenting, IE sucks whenever someone compliments IE. He's talking about all the bad things, and then over the course of this 2 minutes, he's convinced about how awesome IE 10 is because of all the new features and all this stuff. So it's kind of interesting to see IE admit that they used to be terrible. You know, that IE 6 was like the worst browser of all time and hung around for what seemed like 40 years.
Really?
Know? And it's just kind of I like that IE is owning up to their faults.
But you know, they're so shitty.
Yeah. And they're making an active effort to not only change their product but change their brand.
I fucking hate IE.
And they have a new website.
It's hard
website.
For me to go back, man.
I'll never go back. But they have a new website, and it's called the browser you loved to hate.com.
Really?
Because everyone loves to hate IE.
They get some publicity, and they're getting brand awareness off of it. And that all goes around the new notebook that they have.
Yep.
With the new OS.
Yeah, and it's all geared toward Windows 8, which I haven't personally played with Windows 8 yet. I've seen it, but I haven't actually interacted with it for any sort of meaningful time. But from all the ads and the tutorials I've seen, IE 10 actually looks awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I mean, especially now I'm a Mac user. I'm not a PC user.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to use it.
One of my buddies has one, and he says he loves it.
Really?
But, you know, he's not much of a... You know, I consider like everybody in this office, we really use an operating system in a lot of different ways and programs.
Mm-hmm.
So being on multiple different types of programs for different types of tasking, you know, I even look like the Chromebook. It's always Friday. I don't talk this way during the rest of the week, listeners. But the Chromebook, it's a piece of shit. It's a chunky laptop, man.
Yeah.
I've held one. I've played around in it. It's fast. It's cool. It's integrated with Google everything. Obviously, they're doing a bunch of data mining,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very entry level for, I think, I want to say it's like the inner city kid laptop.
Yeah, I know.
They can afford. I'm not trying to put a stereotype on
it
sound bad. But
I mean, it's $250.
$250, man.
And you get a lot for that.
I would consider getting one of those, you know, for my kids, but it's, you know, instead of the iPad mini, but... It opens up
like
a laptop, and it's not cool.
Yeah.
So that's what they want. And I think it's the Surface, the Microsoft Surface. That's what he got with the new operating system. And he thought it's cool and everything. And I think that's their stab at trying to pull Apple users away, give them an alternative that here we have this cool Surface, this whole thing that snaps in and used as a tablet, or a laptop. And it allows you to do all these things. But I can't imagine using Photoshop and some of these other... Excel even and Word and stuff. I can't imagine using them in that type of a format. It's going to be a long, hard time. Even with my iPad, I have a hard time even doing any very long, deranged typing and writing because I just don't like their
interface. I just like tablets for browsing.
Yeah,
and
it's pretty
much
entertainment and browsing and research and stuff. But I still like hitting keys.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think that Microsoft can... realistically make a dent in iPads market share.
No.
Because iPads now over 55% of the market. I mean, they have the tablet market. Now that they have the mini, they appeal to all the people.
Oh, my God.
The people like me who I don't want to buy an iPad because it costs $700.
But so you're going to buy a mini?
I'm not going to. I haven't bought one, but I've considered it because I don't need another big computer. I just want something a little bit bigger than my iPhone to dick around with while I'm on the couch, you know?
Yeah.
Or while I'm laying in bed and I want to read something, but I don't feel like having to turn on a lamp to read a book.
Yeah. Well, I got an iPad mini for my daughter that I'm mm-hmm. giving her for Christmas, and I set it up over Thanksgiving, and it's, you know, it's a mini iPad, but how it feels in your hand, it's awesome.
That's what I've
and
heard.
So I think that's really the market that they're going after. It's smaller, it's concise, it's cuter, it looks more of like a, it's like a small writing notebook, so to speak.
Oh, see, got them in my pocket.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So I think that's going to be really where it comes down to.
Inside pocket.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it really can. It's very light.
That's one of the things that appeals to me.
And for kids, they love it. And as parents, and any parents out there that are listening, if you don't have a tablet or an iPad that you're utilizing for your children, I know you've seen them, and you've seen them from other parents, and it's a huge helper. And
my 6-year-old
also,
brother.
Yeah, it's also very beneficial because the amount of training and learning, mm-hmm. educational-based games and applications that are very low cost, if not free.
Yes.
And reading and writing and actually getting them to write letters. I mean, you can't argue against it just being a babysitter because it's actually a lot of learning that's going
exactly.
on. And if anything more to reinforce that fact, your kids are going to utilize these and only be more integrated with technology as they're going to school and growing older.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Apple is very, very smart on going that route. And I think that is going to be probably one of the best gifts, if not the best gift and the most popular gift of Christmas season this year.
Yeah.
It's going to go pretty far, man. Pretty huge.
I mean, my little brother uses my stepmom's iPad on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Just sitting around, and he draws on it. He writes on it. They have reading programs where it highlights the words.
Yep.
So you read along
mm-hmm.
with it,
mm-hmm.
and you can click it. So if you don't know what the word is, it'll tell you, and then tell you what it means.
Well, you know what's badass, too, that I use for my son, who's a year and a half, is, you know, he's now going to have his own iPad, the full one, but it's, the stand-up at least.
Yeah.
But, I mean, my daughter originally, she grew up with that original first-generation iPad, and before she could talk, she knew how to load a movie. She knew how to hit play. She knew how to hit rewind, how to turn down the volume. So, I mean, her mind already worked, not being able to put words together in her head, but in order to her motor skills to know how to use those functionalities
exactly.
to get what she wanted.
I mean, my little brother Googles stuff. He gets on the computer
yeah.
himself, and he has a list of words that are next to the computer in like an 8x11 sheet of paper. And he's like, okay, homepage is Google. So he just clicks the Chrome button.
Yeah.
And then V-O-L-C-A-N-O. Enter. Volcano. And then
yeah.
he just looks at pictures of volcanoes all day.
See, my son will type in P-O-R-N-O space F-R-E-E. Because he's already into that,
yeah.
at a year and a half.
I understand.
He's got the junk. But I think they're just a great educational tool. And from a worker standpoint, I had a vendor in here the other day, and he had the iPad mini. He was quickly taking notes because he had actually the stylus for
it. Oh, the stylus?
Too. Yeah.
I haven't used a stylus on a tablet
I have
yet.
One.
And I don't... I don't
it's
know
hard
how
to
I feel.
It's like using a Sharpie.
Yeah, as someone who like I learned in college how to take notes on a small notepad.
Yeah,
I can't imagine doing it on a tablet.
That's like getting away from what you're talking about with a keyboard.
Yeah, I love the physical act. It's why
yeah, you
like
want to touch the keys.
I have a Kindle and I have some books on it, and I've read probably 10 or 15 books on it, but I still love the physical act.
Dude, you
of
just got to get
page.
An iPad.
You know.
Yeah, and that's the other cool thing, and then we'll kind of wrap, is pretty much the entire, history of Sesame Street is available through iTunes for free.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
And that is, awesome for my kids. I mean, I would say probably on the one iPad, at least 20, 25 gigs is of Sesame Street.
Now, is Reading Rainbow on there yet?
I don't
because
know.
Because LeVar Burton's the man.
They've got Nickelodeon, and now they're all building, Nickelodeon Nick Kids has, went so far to build individual apps for all their different shows. So you have Dora, you have a separate one for Diego. Dora has numerous episodes, and they're $5 a piece.
That's brilliant.
But they're actually apps that are educational, so
mm-hmm.
they're integrated. So there's tasks for them to do in some of
that's super cool.
UmiZoomi is another one, and they have two different apps, and one of them's free, and they can do all these cool things that's based around the cartoon, but it's helping the kids, put stuff in a proper area, or
mm-hmm.
how do you turn on the light here, or I need to put the trash from that's laying on the street actually in the trash can.
Yeah.
So it's teaching them amazing things for free. So why would a parent not allow their kid to spend time on something like that?
Yeah, I agree. That's awesome.
So that's a wrap.
Thank you for listening to Trademark Productions' weekly podcast radio show. Remember to submit your questions online at tmprod.com and subscribe to our newsletter and on iTunes. No copying of this can be reproduced without permission. Terms apply. Copyright TM Productions 2011. All rights reserved.